Hey, Real Talk podcast listeners, it's a story that people are watching across the country as Alberta's Premier Danielle Smith says federal funds for things like housing, harm reduction, research needs to flow through her, through the province. So her government's introducing legislation you've probably heard that'll force municipalities, housing and health authorities, and other entities to secure the province's approval before they strike deals with Ottawa. Smith says the feds are operating outside their lane. She says Alberta wants to be treated like Quebec. Meantime, municipalities, for one, are saying that dealing with Ottawa is the only way they're able to get anything done. So where does this go? Is this just another fight for political purposes, one that'll cost you, the taxpayer, tens of millions of dollars? Or could Smith be on to something? We put that in front of Charles Adler, plus a bunch of other stories leading the headlines, including Trump on trial, Iran attacking Israel, and more in this episode of Real Talk.
This is a Relay Project. Real Talk starts right now. Here's Ryan Jesperson.
Alberta Premier Danielle Smith wants Justin Trudeau and the federal government to stay out of her backyard. That's what she's calling new legislation, Bill 18, the Provincial Priorities Act, that could have sweeping implications on how federal dollars flow into municipalities for things like housing, on how things like post-secondary research is funded. We're going to spend a good portion of this week looking into Bill 18 on different angles. What are the implications? How successful or not could this be when it comes to the Alberta government's threat to take the feds to court? Everybody seems to be talking about it. We'll put that in front of Charles Adler coming up in just a moment. Plus, Iran aggression against Israel over the weekend. Former President Donald J. Trump appearing in court today as jury selection begins. This is the first criminal trial in American history when a former president is there defending himself. We're going to get into the implications of that. Plus, I'm going to ask Charles to circle back on our Real Talk roundtable from just a few days ago, the Canadian Future Party. Is there room in the political landscape, federally speaking, for another party, a centrist party? Could it possibly succeed? We'll get Chuck's take on that. Plus, positive reflections presented by our friends at Kubi Renewable Energy. The Google Maps photos you just need to see. I promise they're going to make your day. This episode of Real Talk wouldn't be happening without the support of Rello. That's Alberta's best real estate school and the best place to start your career. If you're interested in working for yourself, you like the idea of unlimited earning potential, and heck, the idea of helping folks find their dream home floats your boat. That's something you could get excited about. You're going to want to check out Rello. It's real estate learning online for the bold and ambitious. Now, there's options out there, so why choose Rello? Well, they've got high exam pass rates. They've got flexible online learning. They've got a ton of industry-leading instructors, and the support doesn't stop once you've written your exam and got your license. As a matter of fact, they want to see you succeed, and so they continue those relationships into your career as you take that first step toward financial and career independence. Pretty cool opportunity as well for Real Talkers if you use the promo code Real Talk, all one word, Real Talk, when you get started at Rello.ca. That's R-E-L-O.ca. They'll knock 20% off the price of any course. That's the promo code Real Talk at Rello.ca. Charles Adler, an Emmy Award-winning talk radio legend, and of course, our dance partner, the first episode of every week. It's nice to see your face again, pal. How was the weekend? How did everything go?
Everything went fine, but everything on the weekend is all about this. This is the hour. This is the Grey Cup. This is the Stanley Cup. This is the Super Bowl. And speaking of sports, let's congratulate the national women.
Yeah.
Terrific skaters, terrific shooters, and a gold medal for Canada.
Yeah, world champions. Absolutely fantastic stuff. And a week away from the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs, there's a lot of stuff going on. People are paying attention to what's in the news, what's happening in sports, what's happening in politics and pop culture. We try to wrap it up with you and sort of get the week started off on the right foot with a good amount of understanding here. Cool with you. Why don't we start with Alberta politics? Because I think it's safe to say people across the country are going to be paying attention to what happens with this Bill 18, technically called the Provincial Priorities Act. But Danielle Smith is introducing it as the "Stay Out of My Backyard" bill. She wants to see the end of deals directly with the feds and municipalities, feds and post-secondaries. She wants the province to have a say where and how the money flows at the top level. What are your first reactions?
Well, it is the sort of get off my frickin' lawn bill. And Danielle Smith, regardless of what I may think of her substantively, she is a national rock star, and her star is rising. Part of the reason her star is rising is because we've got this anti-woke kind of cultural counter-revolution going on all over the world, including Alberta, including the rest of Canada, and Danielle Smith is one of the stars of that. But in terms of the substance, this may be once again feeding into the Nahed Nenshi narrative, which is that Danielle Smith wastes a lot of time and a lot of money picking fights with the feds, fights that aren't terribly entertaining at the court level and aren't terribly substantive. And you really have to wonder, as far as the municipalities are concerned, who just want their roads fixed and just want their infrastructure and just want their just need a lot of stuff. You wonder how they feel about their about the premier wanting to rip their stuff off. They, to me, will be the best experts in this conversation, the various councillors and mayors and people representing the municipalities, because if Danielle Smith is willing to sacrifice their needs for her political agenda, and I know her immediate blowback is, what about Quebec? What about Quebec? What about Quebec? But my point is, if she's willing to put the agenda of municipalities on hold, then I just don't think it's something that at the grassroots level works for the people living in those municipalities.
Yeah, so I mean, we can be, and there's a million things you could talk about here. The application of this would be sweeping, and tomorrow the entire show we're going to spend on it. We'll get a few different experts coming at it from different angles. I mean, the post-secondary angle alone, you know, the funding on research is going to be a very interesting one to talk about. You could talk about safer supply programs in addressing the opioid crisis. You could talk about the housing crisis. Federal Minister Sean Fraser making a bunch of big announcements about that, and it's certainly rubbing the province the wrong way. Interesting appearance by the premier. Why don't we roll this? Power and Politics, David Cochrane hosting, the independent political commentators behind The Breakdown were tweeting about this over the weekend, so I know a lot of folks have been paying attention to that. But here's an exchange talking about Alberta's premier, in particular about post-secondaries, with David Cochrane, this just a very short time ago, on Power and Politics.
I have been given enough indication that the federal government uses its power through researchers to only fund certain types of opinions, certain types of researchers, and I don't think that's fair either. I think we need to be able to have a balance in our university if we're going to have a robust, free, and democratic discussion about all issues.
But the National Research Councils are depoliticized, right? It's a jury of academics or peer-reviewed, and they make the decisions through application on research grants going to university, and it's all posted publicly, mm-hmm. so you can see what's there. But you don't have confidence in that system?
I have heard enough from some of our academics about how difficult it can be to be able to access some of that funding. So we just want to do a review, and we want to just see if there's some way that we can make sure that we maintain the environment at universities, which there should be, which is that all people from all political perspectives are able to engage in a robust debate and have a robust research agenda.
I can feel some researchers at the University of Calgary, the University of Alberta, and places in your province getting anxious with that, because, you know, the universities have agreements straight with these granting agencies. It's meant to be independent, to fund, you know, a research that is protected by academic independence.
Well, look,
what kind of a role do you see there for you?
I guess if we did truly have balance in universities, then we would see that we would have just as many conservative commentators as we do liberal commentators. Out of our journalism schools, we'd see just as many conservative-minded journalists graduate as we do progressive-minded journalists graduate. We don't see that. And so that leaves me to be concerned that we're not fostering the kind of environment that allows for balance, because we need to have balance. If we're going to have a balanced discussion in the broader public sphere, it begins at the universities.
I get that, but that would be an issue with campus culture, which is funded by provincial governments. This is like medical research and scientific research and humanities research that is not necessarily determining the makeup and composition of the people who work at a
particular
university.
We'll see. That's why we're doing the review. We want to see what kind of things are being funded. And if there are any areas that are problematic, we'll have to keep that in mind as funding agreements are renewed.
So that's Danielle Smith with David Cochrane on Power and Politics.
Danielle Smith's idea of a conservative journalist is, and I'm going to try to bend over backwards to be polite here, to members of our industry. But for God's sakes, it's the worst kept secret in Alberta that her idea of a conservative journalist is a mindless bingo caller throwing her softballs on these radio and TV infomercials that she loves to do. I mean, she's a control freak. And the best way to control the conversation is not to have a real conversation, just to have those softballs coming in for her to say all the things that some of the things that you just said with David Cochran, where she says, you know, answering a specific question about academic freedom and about the kinds of people that are being given grants. And she's doing the some academics have told me, I mean, that's on the intellectual substances level of the Donald Trump saying some people say this and some people say that. That's what drunks at the bar say. That's not a CEO of a company, CEO of a union, CEO of a province, for goodness sakes. She came up with absolutely no data to make her case. And people can mine this data. Some people are mining it on social media right now. And guess what? They're finding out that the Research Council is giving an incredible amount of money to business, to academics involved in individualistic research. The point is that this idea that the Research Council is funding people who have imbibed the Communist Manifesto is nonsense. I mean, I get, once again, it appeals to the base, and she's only talking to people of certain beliefs, and beliefs don't require facts. But I'm not here to have a religious conversation. You know, I'm here to have a real conversation. And when Danielle Smith wants to bring facts to the party, that'll be really interesting. But this business of academics, some academics tell me, that's a whole load of nothing.
Mm. Dr. Jared Wesley, political scientist, been on the show many times, tweeted over the weekend, probably just me, he says, but as someone who cut his teeth in the Calgary school, I have very little patience for the there aren't any conservatives on campus argument. I mean, referencing, you know, Tom Flanagan and basically, the birth of...
I went to the same school. I went to the Calgary school. I went to the University of Calgary. Most of my professors were conservatives. I mean, and obviously so were Danielle Smith's. And this idea that, conservatives aren't allowed on campus. Yes, I've been on many other campuses. I've been on the Harvard campus. I've been on the Boston University campus. I've been on the University of Manitoba campus, the McGill University campus, and many, many others. And I met many conservatives. Are most professors liberal versus conservative? No, but the idea that people with conservative views aren't allowed on campus, aren't allowed to teach on campus, and people who are conservatives in the scientific community, business community, and all the others haven't been getting research grants. I'm sorry, it's just a load of hooey.
So I do think that there is a conversation to be had about the culture or like the temperature on campus these days. I think that people are having those conversations. I think a lot of it is anecdotal. People will say, well, like, look what happened on this university campus on this day, or look what happened with this professor who said this over here. But I do have some concerns that debate is being stifled, that certain events get canceled, and we could really get into this, the muck and mire of those debates. But I think there is room for debate and conversation about what the academic environment needs to be like on post-secondaries, how people need to be challenged on post-secondaries, how ideas need to be explored. What concerns me specifically in the academic sense, and I don't want to get too out of my depth here because this isn't my wheelhouse, but I don't necessarily love the idea of a government, a provincial government, starting to play favorites or starting to determine who's going to qualify for research dollars when you're talking about things like medical research, scientific research, a government that obviously, and you could probably say the same thing about the feds here, but this is why those independent bodies, the ones making the decisions on where a lot of the funding goes, are so important, because every government, every political party that forms government is going to have its own priorities. It's going to have its own backs to scratch. It's going to have its own interests to protect. And that's no different with the provincial government in Alberta, whomever that may be. And so I don't know that I love the idea of the premier or her cabinet starting to decide where these millions or hundreds of millions of dollars are going to be funneled. Maybe it's a completely different conversation when you're talking about things like housing or you're talking about things like harm reduction. But even there, you start looking at, well, who's the favorites? What jurisdictions elected more conservative MLAs? What jurisdictions, like the city of Edmonton, for example, basically shut out conservative MLAs? And how might a government, punitive would be the heavy word to use, but in other words, with in the context of kind of like political nepotism, how might a government disperse even things like housing funds? And it's a fair question, and it's a question that people should be asking. Thought it was interesting to see the Prime Minister over the weekend basically say, get out of the way. He's not backing down from this, regardless of whatever political costs it might be. He's obviously done the math on his own end.
Look, Danielle Smith and others have always wanted to make the case that the federal government plays favorites, that if the federal government is liberal, that it will be more generous with those provinces that elect liberals as opposed to those who don't. But her case completely falls apart on the level of hypocrisy when the hypocritical premier clearly punishes Edmonton politically. You've got the numbers. You've got the numbers on what Edmonton needs and what Edmonton doesn't get. And once again, it's the worst kept secret in Alberta that because Edmonton does not vote conservative in the main, it doesn't get as much largesse as Calgary does. So for Danielle Smith to try to make the case that, you know, the federal government is playing favorites, all governments play favorites to a certain extent. But I want my government to make sure that the roads are safe. I want my government to make sure that we've got hospitals. I want the government to make sure that our police and fire protection services are their best. I do not want my government rearranging the brains of people and getting them to suck up to the government ideology in order to get money. I do not want my government in the George Orwell business. And everything about this particular bill when it comes to the business of reviewing, I just want to review, she says, I just want to review. That is one of those Orwellian statements that she makes that ought to scare the bejesus out of people who actually want to live in a liberal democracy.
Yeah. So, I mean, ultimately, people say, well, what are the implications of this? Where does this go? All we know where this is going to go right now is there's going to be political posturing provincially and then responses from the feds. And then ultimately, if this winds up in the courts, it's just law firms that are going to get rich. Can we all agree?
Absolutely. And that's why I say it totally feeds into Nenshi's storyline, his narrative, that Danielle Smith wastes a lot of money. We're not talking about thousands of dollars. She wastes multi-millions of dollars picking fights in order to reaffirm her ideology, the ideology of the base. She's spending money on politics instead of government. I mean, this is, you know, this is interesting if you're running a think tank. This is interesting if you're a lobbyist. But for goodness sake, she's the premier of all the people. That's not a cliche. She's an elected public servant. It's about servicing the public. It's about servicing all Albertans, not her ideology.
You want to talk about money and Danielle Smith, pretty interesting piece, eh, by Jason Markusoff in CBC a few days ago, takes UCP fundraising to new heights, does Danielle Smith, reads the headline, while the Alberta NDP strikes red ink, and the numbers are pretty striking. The UCP, you know, roughly speaking, with about $1 million in the bank, the Alberta NDP about $624,000 in debt. And the idea, and Markusoff develops the idea, which I think is kind of interesting, because a lot of times you look at the federal conservatives, for example, a leadership race can really be a boon on the fundraising side. But with the political contributions and how it works, if somebody donates $5,000 to a leadership candidate, they can't donate anything to the party. They're capped there. They're limited. The Alberta NDP could be in real financial trouble, which obviously would have implications. Not that there's an election looming, but for party operations, marketing, promotion, political influence, advertising, there are a lot of reasons why this story is pretty relevant.
So, yeah, well, you know, conservatives have more money than socialists and people on the left. I mean, that's always been the case, you know.
But the NDP was out fundraising. Notley's NDP were out fundraising the UCP for quite some time, and it was significant. So I'm just curious to know why the tide turned and what it means.
Well, part of you know, I mean, we had John Sununu aborting his conscience on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos.
Chris,
Sununu is a governor of New Hampshire, and Stephanopoulos essentially said to him, "So, are you willing to vote for a felon?" I mean, a year ago, Sununu was all over the fact that Donald Trump was an agent of chaos and he was going to destroy the country, destroy the Republican Party, etc. And of course, at that time, Sununu was supporting Trump's opponent. The former governor of South Carolina. So that's what he was doing less than a year ago. And yesterday he was saying, well, that doesn't matter what happens to Donald Trump in court. It doesn't matter what Sununu has said in the past. He's a Republican, and he's going to vote for the Republican candidate regardless. And, of course, Sununu looked like a guy who was all about politics and not about public service, not about conscience, not about the Constitution. But in all of that mess, Sununu said that there was a revolution going on, a counter-revolution, an anti-woke revolution. And just to, you know, cut to the chase here, it is absolutely true that around the world there is pushback against the he, she, we squad. A lot of people are absolutely fed up with that. And I'm just using he, she, we as sort of an example, just a quick literary device, if you will, to make the case that a lot of people are really getting sick and tired of so-called woke ideology. There's a pushback against it. There's really a pushback in Alberta. And Danielle Smith wins big in being the queen of the counter-revolution, the anti-woke revolution in Alberta and possibly in Canada. And it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of people who are fed up with the wokers and the jokers are putting up money for Danielle Smith's party to say, go get them. Go get him, Tiger.
Yeah, referencing Mark Youssef's reporting, CBC.ca, last year, 2023, Danielle Smith's United Conservatives broke a provincial record, pulling in $10.4 million. The NDP surpassing $9 million between the election period and the rest of 2023, so from May all the way through, which, as a point of interest, beat Jason Kenney's best fundraising as well. Pretty interesting stuff. But Danielle Smith, if you look at the numbers, like, pretty interesting. The UCP reporting more than 300,000, 306,000 in membership fees. The NDP reporting 40,000. That's a pretty stark contrast there. Mark Youssef says the fact that the NDP ended the year more than $500,000 in debt, even more remarkable considering they entered the year 2023 with $5.5 million in the bank. The UCP had less than $3 million. But Rachel Notley spending a lot of that money with heavy pre-campaign advertising, as Mark Youssef notes, including time for a special commercial during the Academy Awards, which isn't cheap. So the story, the tale of the tape, the fundraising is one that we'll keep an eye on. It either is or isn't relevant, depending on the context of the conversation, but I would suggest it's better to be flush than broke.
Absolutely. Look, and it's also not unusual for people to want to donate money to the winners, to the people who are in government, to the people who have the juice, to people who have the influence, and the people who are likely to have it for years. I mean, I was asked in an interview, just a few days ago, you know, regardless of whatever my feelings are about Notley and Nenshi and Smith and all the rest of it, who do I think will win the next Alberta provincial election? Well, I think the Conservatives will win. Because regardless of whatever I may think of that Danielle Smith and everything we're talking about, people vote party. And the idea of predicting that people will vote for the Conservative Party in Alberta is hardly radical. The only time since I've been born, the only time in my entire life where the Conservatives didn't win in Alberta is when the Conservatives were split in two. So they're not split in two. They're united. It's called the United Conservative Party. And once again, it doesn't matter what I think of some of what they're doing. Most people in Alberta are Conservatives. That's just a fact.
I'm going to ask you about in a little bit later on whether there's room for another sort of ish Conservative Party, centrist party, federally speaking, federally. But you did reference Governor Chris Sununu's interview, New Hampshire governor, with George Stephanopoulos on ABC. This was on Sunday, so we're talking about one day ago, April 14th. Why don't we get into this? I do think it's fascinating. It was sort of widely described as a bit of a disaster. But here's the back and forth, George Stephanopoulos and New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu.
Tomorrow, that criminal trial. Will your support for Donald Trump continue even if he's convicted in Manhattan?
Yeah, this trial is not going to have major political ramifications that a lot of people, I think it may have. When it comes to these issues, people see it more as reality TV at this point. They really do. And so, whether it's a conviction or what that conviction looks like, a lot of folks, they conflate all four of these different trials that he's in. I don't think it's good that he's going to be in the court, have to be in there probably 3 days a week, for a number of weeks. That takes him off the campaign trail. He'll probably go back on the campaign trail and almost like rehash what's going on. He'll try to victimize it, and that has worked for him, right? I mean, this has been going on for over a year, and his poll numbers never seem to go down because of the issue.
Well, yeah, you're going to politics, though. I'm asking you about right and wrong. You think you're comfortable with the idea of supporting someone who's convicted of a federal crime as president?
No. I don't think any American is comfortable with any of this. They don't like any of this, of course. But, I mean, when it comes to actually, you know, looking at each of these trials, as they kind of take place, whether it's this year or next year, as they kind of line up, the right now this is about an election. Right. This is about politics. That's what people are judging this on. And the ultimate, you know, decision will be in November.
So it's just politics. In a way, he's not wrong.
We can choose in this world to be pundits, or we can choose to be moral leaders. So it's fine to do pundits. It's fine to say, here's what the polls say, but here's what I think. And that's why I think that what you and I do has an audience, because we tell people both. And just like a few moments ago, I said, regardless of how I may feel about Notley and Nenshi versus Smith, I think most people vote conservative. And I don't think that's going to change in the next couple of years. So it's the same thing here. The polls say that Donald Trump is ahead. We've been talking about that for a while. But on a question of character, on a question of the Constitution, here's a politician, Chris Sununu in New Hampshire, who basically is getting the question that no politician wants. Are you a whore or a moral leader? And he's basically saying, I'm about the politics. I'm about being a Republican. But when you say that, you're selling out the Constitution for your party. You're basically saying that your party and your party affiliation is more important than your citizenship, more important than your patriotism. That's not a box that any politician wants to be in, and that's the box that Chris Sununu was put in yesterday with George Stephanopoulos.
So for folks not paying the closest attention to this, it is the first time in history that a former American president has faced criminal trial, about 34 charges, I think, relating to alleged hush money payments, including to a porn star ahead of the last presidential election. One thing that Sununu is not wrong about is that, you know, regardless of or in spite of all of the talk around this and the coverage around this, Trump's support has not wavered. In some circumstances, it's actually grown. Why do you think that this trial will be significant?
I think this trial will be significant because this will put the George Stephanopoulos question to every American. What's more important to you? How popular the president is, how much some of your friends and neighbors and loved ones like this guy, or the Constitution, which, of course, is all about democracy and the rule of law. And I get that some people say that he wouldn't be prosecuted at all if he wasn't Donald Trump. He wouldn't be prosecuted at all if he wasn't them. But the thing is, if you go into the entrails of all the charges, all of the allegations, and all of the things that Donald Trump has said on tape, it's really difficult. I mean, it's really difficult to look at January 6th and not think that Donald Trump had not just something, but a lot to do with an attempted insurrection. And as Canadians, we just simply have to ask ourselves, how would we feel if the leader of a political party wanted not the convoy business, so much of that was just amateur crap, okay? Yeah, it was a bloody nuisance. But I'm talking about the kind of thing they had on January 6th. How would we feel if the leader of a political party, and in this case, he was the president at the time, so how would we feel if the prime minister himself, in order to try to stay in power, was inspiring, I'll use a nice word, was inspiring an illegal insurrection, inspiring people to commit violence, to actually commit violence on Parliament Hill and threaten the lives of people who are elected public servants. I don't think in Canada anybody who did such a thing would ever be considered. Am I trying to say that we're morally superior to the Americans? No, they've got a different system. But I really think, having lived in the States, and yes, having been a big supporter of the Republicans in the States, I would have an impossible time voting for Donald Trump as president. I may not want to vote for the Democrat. I may write in someone else. I don't think I'd stay at home. I'd find that impossible. But the idea of voting for Donald Trump if he's a convicted felon, I'm sorry, I can't go there.
So jury selection as we speak, and we'll obviously continue to keep an eye on this trial. When we come back, I want to ask you about the future of conservative or centrist politics in Canada. I want to ask you about Iran's aggression against Israel as well. The Americans, Joe Biden says they're not getting involved no matter what. What are the implications there? This is one that I think makes everybody nervous once Iran starts getting involved. More with Charles Adler in just a second. You know that Friesen Brothers, we talk about our partners here that make this show possible, just opened the doors a few days ago on their brand new West Edmonton location. That's Friesen Brothers Glenora. And we love this note we got from Brian, who says, I just got back from the new Glenora Friesen Brothers. Says, Jespo, Johnny, it's all your fault. He went on a shopping spree there, Johnny. He says, I've been to the Friesen Brothers in Stony Plain before. I've been waiting for this one to open ever since. Beautiful store, great staff. Definitely a new regular stop for us. He says, I'm excited to try the father dough pizza and those sourdough cinnamon buns. That's from Bry Guy. Nice choices, pal. That pizza, Johnny and I both love that. It's not frozen. You buy it fresh, you put it in the oven, it comes out just like it would in a wood-fired oven. It's absolutely fantastic. And don't even get me started on the sourdough cinnamon buns. I've been raving about those for years. Friesen Brothers, now 17 locations across the province of Alberta. Alberta-grown and Alberta-owned. You know, we know that emissions are one of the top concerns that Canadians have, and it's one of the things that industry is paying attention to as well. Take a second today to check out PathwaysAlliance.ca. It's working with governments, Pathways Alliance is, on a proposed carbon capture and storage network for Canada's oil sands. As global energy demands change, Canada's six largest oil sands companies are working together to offer the world responsibly produced oil. Working with those governments, provincially and federally, Pathways Alliance is planning to build a large-scale carbon capture and storage network that'll be designed to reduce emissions from operations, protect existing jobs, and create new ones. Responsibly produced energy is what the world wants, and Pathways Alliance believes it's what Alberta can provide. You can learn more details by checking out PathwaysAlliance.ca. And for those of you that are looking to reinvent, transform your outdoor space this summer, really bring it to life, you're going to want to take a second to check out landscapeedmonton.ca. That's where you'll find the work of Eden Landscaping, a custom builder with more than two decades of on-the-ground experience in Edmonton and area. They offer full project management, which means from the design phase all the way through to the last day they're on site. You don't have to worry about subcontractors. You're not having to worry about filling in the blanks. They can cover your excavation needs, irrigation, lighting, drainage, planting and removal, outdoor kitchens, water features, whatever you can dream up, they can make it happen. And they're great listeners. I've seen it firsthand. You can get in touch with Mike and his team today. It's a family-owned business. That's Eden Landscaping at landscapeedmonton.ca. Our most recent Real Talk Roundtable, just this past Friday, depending on when you're listening to the show, that was April 12th. We talked to three individuals involved in the new Canadian Future Party. And if you haven't yet heard about it, you're not alone. It's just an upstart. It's at the grassiest grassroots. It's at the, like, seedling stage of the grassroots, Johnny, for the landscaping analogy there. And one of those guests was the interim leader of the party. He's an independent MLA right now out in the Maritimes, former education minister under Premier Blaine Higgs, Dominic Carty, who told us what sets their party apart from the federal Liberals and the federal Conservatives.
Why do we need a new party? Because I do not see the Conservative Party in their rhetoric around, for example, the war in Ukraine, where they say that their opposition to the carbon tax is so extreme that they voted against a free trade deal with our ally who is at war with Russia, which has said that it's at war with us. So Canadian Future Party won't do that. We won't say that it's acceptable for our members of parliament to sit down with members of a German neo-fascist party, which Mr. Poilievre has done. We will not play footsie with Hamas activists, the way the prime minister has done. We are here to wholeheartedly, loudly celebrate the achievements of Western civilization as a civilization that's brought people together from around the world to challenge and fix problems and to make a life that's unimaginably great compared to anything else in the history of the planet. That is how we are going to do things differently. We're going to be proud of our country's past, honest about its flaws, and rather than focusing on the endless apology tours that our prime minister is so fond of, actually talk about fixing problems.
That was Dominic Carty, interim leader of the Canadian Future Party. Chuck, you think there's room for these guys on the political spectrum? They say that they're going to run candidates in by-elections coming up just months from now. What are your initial thoughts?
Well, my initial thoughts are he's a very, very interesting guest, and he's an interesting pundit and perhaps an interesting columnist and maybe someday a party leader. I don't know. But I just know that the political business is all about big brands, no different than the detergent business, the beauty business, the broadcasting business. It's going to take a lot of money and a lot of top-level candidates and a lot of access to media for another party to be formed. I think if the Liberal Party, which is seen, whether people like it or not, the Liberal Party is seen as the closest party to the center, I think the Liberal Party would have to be absolutely demolished in the next election for any other party that sees itself as a centrist party to grow. So it is just, as you said a few moments ago very accurately, it's just a little seedling right now. I like the idea of a centrist political party. I really, really, really do. So I wish them well, but it's a very big mountain.
Yeah, it's fascinating for me that, you know, when you use the word centrist in politics, a lot of people, including friends of mine, most particularly those that are either super involved, super interested in politics or working in politics, and on the left and the right, they both roll their eyes when you invoke the word centrist. Like they sort of like scoff and laugh it off, and probably for good reason, because there hasn't really been like a centrist political upstart that's really done well. But here's the rub for me is that the average person, when it comes to how the average person is wired or the way that the average person thinks, most people are kind of in the middle. They don't like the extremes. They don't land on the far left or the far right. No. But it doesn't seem to resonate with political allegiance.
Because politics is irrational. So here it is. On the one hand, you're saying rational people are in the middle. Rational people understand that some ideas that are from the left are the right ideas, and some ideas from the right are the right ideas. That's how rational people, most Canadians, are. However, politics is not irrational, not rational at all. Politics is highly irrational. Politics is highly emotional. And the people who drive politics, the so-called activists, are usually left of center or right of center. It's a very, very hard to find a real centrist activist. I mean, have you ever tried to, you know, get thousands of moderates to a rally? Moderates don't rally. They do vote, but they end up voting center left or center right because that's how the system is. And by the way, that's the system that exists in every single country. This discussion that we're having about why can't we have a powerful centrist party? Find me a country with a powerful centrist party. It's eminently rational. If we just put it through some sort of, you know, artificial intelligence program, I'm sure we could come up with something. But in the real world, not the artificial world, not the theoretical world, in the real world, most people who are highly, highly political are left or right of center.
I just even, and I brought up the example of Reform and what Preston Manning accomplished. I mean, this amid, like, sort of, you know, if you look at where the political, what the political landscape looked like at that time, Brian Mulroney's Conservatives were losing some support. People were choked about Meech Lake. People were choked about the GST. And then Manning comes in with a lot of like hype and fervor and that kind of that Western alienation drum, which can bang quite loudly, as you know. It's, you know, we led with it today. For that matter, but that was the thing, is it was, and I'm not saying there was no substance to what Preston Manning offered, but there was a lot of angst, and there was a lot of like existing support and existing sentiment that he skillfully tapped into and quickly built Reform into a serious player. Obviously, the official opposition and a big part of where the Conservative Party of Canada ultimately would go, right, with the merger. Now, I think it's a tougher assignment, you know, to get a bunch of people sort of like rationally moderately sort of middle ground to sort of try to knock off the big political parties, where you'll have, you know, Pierre Poilievre and what he's doing with obviously a ton of momentum. And then you'll have the federal liberals that are going to present themselves as the, you know, kind of like the anti-Poilievre, the stable government. As an aside, I got an interesting, political flyer in our mailbox over the weekend. Our member of parliament in Edmonton Centre is Randy Bosno. He's one of the few Alberta liberals and obviously a cabinet minister. You know what it said? I wish I had it in my hand. You know, it says on the back of the bill, it says, "I will stand up to Danielle Smith and Pierre Poilievre," which is, yeah. "I will fight back. I will stand up to these two," which I thought was interesting messaging from someone who's in government, who's a cabinet minister. So there's the dynamic, right? You've got like Poilievre and all the momentum. You've got the Trudeau liberals trying to hang on. Whether they can or not remains to be seen. My guess is no, but we'll see. There's lots of runway between now and the federal election. So to try to grab people's attention, let alone fundraise, you know, let alone pull votes away, important votes away from those two political parties, if you want to call them the legacy parties, so to speak. I never want to bring people in and tell them that, you know, their vision has no chance, that they might as well not try. That's not my spirit when how I approach, you know, democracy and involvement in democracy. But I don't know that there's, I think tapping into angst and anger and real heavy conviction is one thing. I think trying to ask everyone to kind of be moderate and meet in the middle, although that works in like the workplace, it works in families, sure. It works in friend groups. It doesn't work in politics.
In the real world, we insist on that.
Yeah.
I mean, in the real world, I mean, do we really want some blowhard with a bunch of conspiracy theories and all that angst and all that emotional stuff? Do we want that person in our faces when we work? Do we want that person in our faces when we're just, you know, at a Christmas party? Do we want that person in our faces, you know, when we're married? I mean, no. I mean, this is, you know, this is the stuff of political entertainment. And that's what most of politics is. Most of politics is TV. Most of politics is what we're doing right now. It's difficult to have really fascinating conversations, but people are in the center. But listen, I'm a Canadian, Ryan, just like you. And ultimately, the only way to really explain something is to find a hockey analogy. And when it comes to hockey, most of the emotion, most of the pain, most of the brawl is in the goal crease area, not center ice.
Want to turn our attention to an international story, maybe the international story right now, is the Americans and the UK, the political leaders in France. I mean, the UN Security Council, for that matter, are all urging Israel to basically take it easy after an escalation over the weekend, Saturday night, our time, as Iran launches an unprecedented large-scale drone and missile attack, about 300 projectiles, it's estimated, fired toward Israel in a big aerial attack overnight. It's in retaliation, so say the experts, for a suspected Israeli airstrike on an Iranian diplomatic complex in Syria. So it brings this, you know, as people have described it, kind of a shadow war between these two sides into the open. People are wondering and concerned, obviously, about the implications of a full-blown regional conflict. Like I said, Joe Biden, probably the most significant voice in this one, says is urging restraint on Israel, says the Americans will not get involved in any aggression against Iran. What's different about this, and what's, you know, maybe some of the key details that you're focusing on or paying attention to?
Well, first of all, I've never seen a country that got the attack that Israel got without pushing back. So they're going to have to do something. The something may not be the most dramatic something that Israel could possibly do, but they will likely do something. I can't expect that they wouldn't. And I also can't expect the American president to say go for it, because the American president can't be seen as risking the escalation of a conflict in the Middle East. It has impacts on the price of oil. It has impacts on his own opportunity for re-election. It's just bad political news for him domestically if the conflict expands. But the thing is, Israel did strike compound in Syria. They did assassinate a couple of significant Iranian military leaders. So Iran had to strike back. How did it strike back? The most important part of it was Iran gave the whole world, specifically the Israelis and Americans, lots of warnings. And yes, Iran sent a whole bunch of missiles and drones into Israel, but Iran knew, the whole world knew, that the defense system that Israel has, courtesy of the United States, United States armor, United States training, and the United States itself would defend every parcel of land that was being attacked. Were the Iranians pretty ballsy from a military perspective in going after Jerusalem? I guess if any of those missiles had hit Jerusalem, many people would have been killed, and many of the people killed would have been Muslims. So that would have been very, very controversial. But I think that most observers were not surprised that the Americans and the Israelis were able to beat back that campaign. Will there be further conflict? Will the Israelis strike Iran? I believe they will, but I don't believe the Israelis will strike in a way that will be so dramatic as so as to escalate the conflict substantially. If the conflict is substantially escalated, all bets are off. But I can tell you this, if Iran wants to do a different kind of strike on Israel, they will suffer a lot of pain, not just from Israel, but the Americans. The Americans will have no choice because Iran is on the precipice of being a nuclear power, and no country wants that, and certainly not the Israelis and the Americans.
Back to Canada here. An interesting question from Marcello, who says, I'd love to hear you ask Adler how much of his support for Trudeau's Liberals is because the Conservatives are dysfunctional, and how much is because the Liberals have drifted far enough right to satisfy soft C Conservatives like Adler. There's an interesting question. You want to hear it again?
I guess I'm now seen as a supporter of the Liberals because I have problems with the Conservatives.
Yeah, it starts with the premise of like how much of Charles' support for Trudeau's Liberals. So there you go. But you have gone on the record to talk about your sort of like intellectual journey, your political journey. So how much of it is because, well, I mean, take issue with that assertion if you want. How much is because the Conservatives are dysfunctional, says Marcello, his take on it. And how much is because the Liberals have drifted far enough right?
Look, I'm always putting, you know, this is what I'm most guilty of. I have probably a double standard in politics because the Conservative Party was my home for so many years. So my expectations of them are a lot higher than they are of the Liberals, which I attacked for many years. So I just can't believe the Conservatives have to go as far right as they have to. I can't believe they have to dumb themselves down. I can't believe they have to get into all the populist nonsense, especially as it relates to the anti-vax stuff and the conspiracies. And so the Conservatives are a major disappointment to me. So, yes, I talk about that. I talk about that extensively. I talk about how much I admire Danielle Smith as a debater, as a person who's intellectually strong, and how disappointed I am that she goes into all that conspiratorial glue. And if Marcello or someone else wants to see that as the embracing of liberalism or the Liberal Party, I mean, that's up to them. But I don't think about that very much. I'm still very, very caught up, like a fly is in a trap, about how the Conservatives have, in my opinion, debased themselves. And I'm still hoping that they can clean up their act. But once again, it's very difficult for me to look at all of that as some kind of embrace, some kind of infomercial for the Liberal Party.
James in our YouTube live chat says, I'm okay with that statement from Marcello for myself. He says, I don't particularly like the Liberals, but as a disaffected progressive conservative, I'm definitely not supporting Pierre Poilievre. That from James. I wanted to use the question to tee this up in closing, and with apologies to our audience, we can't play the Bill Maher clip. The YouTube algorithm copyright stuff will shut it down. But there was something about it. You tweeted about it over the weekend, and people can follow you at Charles Adler, and they'll find the clip there. Bill Maher speaks for, I don't know, 8 minutes or so, a monologue. He says, they say in politics, liberals are the gas pedal, conservatives are the brakes. He says, I'm generally with the gas pedal, but not if we're driving off a cliff. Can you sum up the monologue? Because we can't play it. And can you tell us why it resonated with you? It clearly did.
Yeah, no, it resonated because Bill Maher was saying, and yeah, there were some aspects of what he said about Canada that bothered me, but I can put that aside. I mean, you know, he's a comedian, and the thing has to be funny, and it was very funny. But putting aside some of the stuff he said about Canada, which I don't happen to agree with, partly because I see Canada as my promised land, so I never plan to agree with someone who's putting down my country, including Pierre Poilievre putting down my country by constantly telling me that my beautiful country is broken. So essentially, Bill Maher is saying that the left has gone too far left, and he's particularly focusing on the woke stuff, as I said earlier in this podcast, the he, we, she business. And I think a lot of people have gotten really tired of it. I know I get tired of it. I know when people say to me, Chuck, on your Twitter, why don't you mention that you're a he, him? Stop. It's nonsense. It's foolishness. I don't have to be Jordan Peterson to be irritated and annoyed by that. And yes, so many liberals do become liberals, NDPers, whatever you want to call them. So many people on the left become really annoying when they don't just present their perspective, but they tell you that if you don't agree with their perspective, then you're a racist or a homophobe or a misogynist or whatever. That's an intellectually porous way of arguing. It's juvenile. And so for Marcello, who thinks that I've become, you know, a poster child for liberals, I'm sorry. There are a lot of things about liberals that annoy me, and some of them are what Bill Maher talked about in his monologue. And yeah, it resonated. And Bill Maher was essentially saying that many liberals are moving the middle to the right. And essentially, his punchline was all about Trump. Bill Maher doesn't want Trump to get elected. But Bill Maher and many others believe that if Trump does get elected, it's because liberals have been driving their bus off the cliff, and Trump is the pushback on what I'll just call the woke revolution that a lot of people are sick and tired of.
Yeah, I think you could say the same thing about Pierre Poilievre. I hear people talk about it all the time. And I think that we see that parallel. I'm not necessarily directly comparing the two, Trump and Poilievre. But I do think that there are similar sentiments driving a lot of the momentum and a lot of the support behind both of those, both those candidates, basically.
Ryan, there are right of center people who are winning big in places like the Netherlands, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. Right of center people for the first time are starting to win in the Norways and the Swedens. So this is a worldwide phenomenon, no different than worldwide inflation. And the average person who is, I still believe, a person in the middle, the kind of person you and I are talking about, the average person doesn't want to be told what to think and doesn't want to be told how to think and doesn't want to be told that if they're not thinking along the same lines and spouting along the same lines, that there's something wrong with them. That feels like authoritarianism. Now, the irony here is that people are responding to left of center authoritarianism by voting for right of center authoritarianism. That's not going to make any of us happy, but I would be very unhappy if I didn't level with you and simply look you in the eye and honestly tell you that the left has pissed off a lot of people.
I agree. And people talk about pendulums swinging and the political implications of it. And I mean, ultimately, we'll see what that looks like. The next time Canadians go to the polls, we'll see what it looks like in November in the U.S. Not to boil down entire elections to this one issue, but I do think it's a contributing factor. I encourage people to check out that monologue on your Twitter. Leave a comment there and let us know what you think about what Chuck and I have been talking about. Talk@RyanJesperson.com is our email. We're going to get to one from Ron in just a second, but first we will bid adieu to the Titan of Talk, as we call him, the Emmy Award winner, Charles Adler. We'll talk to you again in a week, pal.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks for doing it. We'll get to Ron's email in just a second. It goes back to that Get Out of My Backyard bill, which is what Danielle Smith is calling Bill 18, the Provincial Priorities Act. First, we'll let you know that this conversation is happening with the support of our friends at California Closets, who have one mission in 2024, and that is to help you get organized. Help you take advantage of the expertise that their team has in custom closets and storage solutions for the entire home. Make the most of your space with their custom organizational systems. Number one, you got nothing to lose by requesting a free consultation. Check in with their design team. Let them know where your biggest, let's say, organizational deficiencies are. For some of us, it's the laundry room. For some of us, it's the home office. You can't find your phone charging cable. You don't know where your pens have been. You just keep buying new ones. Maybe you got wine glasses cluttering the kitchen, or maybe your entertainment center is just the TV sitting on top of a bunch of boxes. California Closets, their team of designers, their team of installers, the best in the business. And again, it all starts with that consultation. You request it for free at californiaclosets.ca. If you're looking to school up, if you're looking to level up your understanding of the world around you and prepare yourself for success in the job market, Athabasca University is ready for you. It's Canada's open university. That's why tens of thousands of Canadians have looked to AU, because they have world-class accredited online degrees and courses designed so you can complete your education wherever and whenever it works for you. You can check out the AU Advantage by visiting athabascau.ca. Understand how the flexible study options, how the accessibility benefits work, personalized learning plans, and of course, that supportive community. You can get your application started online or request more information on things like financial supports, all kinds of programs from courses through to undergrads through to, heck, they've got an MBA plus one of Canada's leading research institutions. That's Athabasca University. And I hate to put it this way, but as we enter wildfire season, more and more Albertans are going to be dealing with the impact of Mother Nature. It could be fire. It could be flood. Heck, maybe some of you are just realizing that what was supposed to be a small renovation project is all of a sudden a lot more serious because you've discovered asbestos or black mold. You don't want to treat this stuff yourself or leave it to just anybody, someone you found on Kijiji. You're going to want to get in touch with Complete Care Restoration. They've got a team of certified professionals with more than 25 years of experience in restoring property and rebuilding peace of mind. Complete Care Restoration is the contractor you can rely on. They're ready to respond 24/7. You can check out their work, understand what sets them apart from their competitors in comprehensive mitigation and restoration services. They're online at completecarerestoration.ca. Well, we got this email from Ron to talk at ryanjesperson.com. We're going to try to leave time every episode this week to get to your emails because we're getting more and more of them, and we absolutely love the engagement. Ron says, I'm writing in after listening to the April 10th episode of Real Talk. We're talking about this Provincial Priorities Act, Bill 18. We're going to learn more about it this week. He says, I'm not angry, says Ron. I'm just disappointed. I don't agree with the United Conservatives' decision. Daniel Smith picking yet another fight with the feds. Ron says, now I'm a political unicorn in this province, and I get it. Personally, I hate seeing my tax dollars go to yet another frivolous litigation campaign, or at least toward threatening one. He says, Smith's government's actions have directly led to communities not wanting to work with them. Remember, the context here is municipalities doing deals directly with the feds, right? He says, when push comes to shove, our municipalities are left with no other option than to go to Ottawa when the provincial government fails them. And Daniel Smith has failed this province, says Ron. I'm continually disappointed by the actions, the endless fights that the province is picking with Ottawa. He says, I've said many times how much I love this province, but these never-ending, nonstop battles are exhausting. And my wish list is three items deep: stable healthcare, stable income, and stable housing. But I fear that a new fight with the feds on funding for affordable housing will put that in jeopardy. And thinking back to January, it took Edmonton declaring a housing emergency to take notice of the struggles that our city's been subjected to. It shouldn't be this hard to equally represent Edmonton, Calgary, and every other community in this province. Ron says, when municipalities are forced to circumvent the province and ask Ottawa for assistance, it speaks to a larger issue that I think that the premier and her government are ignoring. Edmonton and other communities feel neglected. They feel ignored. And instead of addressing it, they act like it's a slight against them. It's not. But the province feels like it is, and we have no other choice. Ron says, I think that this is going to give the NDP a lot of political ammo to hammer the UCP on come 2027. Ron says, I'm tired, but I'm grateful for the forum on Real Talk. That from Ron. Thanks. That's an email to talk@ryanjesperson.com. Coming up on tomorrow's Real Talk, we're going to dig deeper into Bill 18. And as we wrap today, we want to let you know, Johnny, just as we get into positive reflections, that we've got a couple of guests lined up. We're going to try to address, we want to talk housing. We want to talk research at universities. Mm-hmm. We want to talk about all the different ways that this legislation could impact people. So we always want to give you the heads up as the audience. If you have a specific question about this, or if you have a specific point, like maybe an issue lands a little bit more heavy with you because you're directly impacted. Maybe there's a point that you'd like to make that we haven't made on the show. We encourage you to provide your feedback. This is the people's show, and you know where to find us. talk@ryanjesperson.com is the best because it'll be there in our inbox ready for us. But we also thank those of you that leave comments on our TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter posts every single day. We got a whole bunch of them. Hey, I see that our TikTok is getting right up near 10,000. Aren't we just a couple of hundred shy?
Yeah, thanks to all our followers.
Yeah, it'd be nice if we could get our TikTok at RealTalkRJ to 10,000. Why don't we say by the end of the week? That'd be nice. So if you're on TikTok, go ahead and give us a follow. We're going to wrap today. I absolutely love this one. This is from Lucinda, who sent us a note, an Instagram DM, by the way, and she found an account. I don't know if you found Society, but this is a great positive reflection presented by our friends at Kubi Renewable Energy. You can get a free solar quote online at kubienergy.ca. Every week, we harness positive energy and restore our faith in humanity. And I love this. Lucinda found this on Instagram and decided to share it with all of us. This from the island of Jukdo, which is just a small island adjacent to South Korea. There's a beautiful golden retriever that found a Google Maps photographer, a vehicle. I mean, it looks more like they were on feet, Johnny, because it's on pathways and on coastlines. Mm-hmm. But this golden retriever started following and running around with the photographer for Google Maps on the island of Jukdo. And so check this out. If you take a tour on Google Maps through this island, you're going to find that in almost every single photo, as a matter of fact, there's more than 1,000 of them, where the golden retriever is in the photo.
It's like Where's Waldo?
It's like Where's Waldo? And you can check this out online. You can find it on Instagram. We'll actually put the link in the show notes here on podcast and on YouTube. But even more fun is to just go on a Google Maps tour yourself. The island J-U-K-D-O, a South Korean island. And we couldn't help but smile till our faces hurt as we saw these photos. And we want to thank Lucinda for sharing that with us. She's a regular Real Talker, she tells us. Her first submission to Positive Reflections. We were happy to include it. If something made you smile through the week, restored your faith in humanity, filled your bucket, so to speak, we'd love to include it in a future episode of Positive Reflections. Send us an email. Make sure you put Positive Reflections in the subject line. It's proudly presented every week by our friends at Kubi Renewable Energy. As promised, we'll dig into provincial politics coming up on tomorrow. That's April 16th episode of Real Talk. A better understanding of the potential implications of this Provincial Priorities Act. In the meantime, thanks so much for liking and sharing our content. We want to make sure as many people as possible can see these episodes. Thanks for subscribing to us on YouTube through our Real Talk channel. And of course, for telling your friends. We'll see you again in less than 24 hours.
Real Talk is hosted by Ryan Jesperson. Executive producer, Josh Dunford. Technical producer, John Hicks. General manager, Katie Cook-Chivers. Account coordinator, Lawrence Derlego. Human resources, Lena Shepherd. Website design, Mike Johnston. Voiceover by me, Carrie Skelton. Real Talk's editorial board is Supriya Dubedi, Ahmed Ali, Randy Morin, Ann Castleman, Corey Hogan, Harmon Candola, Catherine O'Neill, and Chris Henderson. Member Emerita, Julie Rohr. Real Talk is recorded in Edmonton, Alberta, on Treaty 6 territory, the traditional and ancestral territory of the Cree, Dene, Blackfoot, Soto, and Nakota Sioux, home to the Métis settlements and the Métis Nation of Alberta. Real Talk is a Relay project. For more, check out ryanjesperson.com.